Hope she gives you all the money you ever wanted. Unlike you, I'm not for sale. I leave her. Soon, I've packed half the supplies I found in the wreckage and donned a set of grey thermal pants from a supply locker, with my feet slipping around in the two large boots of some dead grey. I start walking south, away from the crash site. Part of me waits for Volga to catch up with me. She doesn't. All that lies before me is stone and icy sludge, a vast landscape that would swallow me without anyone noticing. This isn't home. This is the first time I've felt truly alone since replying to Volga's note. How does that already seem a lifetime ago? I look back at the ship. It's little more than a dot now. I don't have a plan, but I don't want to be saved by Victor's men. I don't want to be traded back to Ephraim and owe him for the favour. I'd rather freeze to death trying to go it on my own. Walking along the fjord, I see several ships skimming just over the dark water down below as they head for the crash site. They're little more than dots at this distance. That'll be Victor's men. Takes me almost a minute to figure out how to turn on the oculars I foraged. When I've got them working, I focus on the lead ship. I roll the magnifier. Ship looks like a pelican, one of those old transports with those round bodies and slightly curved wings. A bit less stately than I'd expect for a Gold's rescue party. No Julii or Barker insignia either. I switch to the next one. Another pelican, older. On its side is painted the face of a pink model drinking a bottle of ambrosia. I pause. Its lights blaze just as they did that day when my family was butchered. I turn and run back across the plateau. I'm dizzy from exhaustion by the time I find Volga near the crash site, helping Victra out of her battered armour. Volga smiles at me. I knew you would come back. Red Hand! I gasp for air. Red Hand is coming! Volga slings forward a scavenged rifle. Red Hand, are you certain? It's a day for vultures, Victra mutters. She scans the sky, and I think she finally understands that for some reason her men aren't coming. They'll kill me and the Kuldi. She glances at me. Might be worse for you, Gamma. I look at her belly. It's about ready to burst. Can you... She bolts, already 10 meters away and moving fast. Volga's on her tail. Shit! I struggle after them in the deep snow. They're incredibly fast. Victra's legs drive her like pistons through the forest and straight up a huge hill as she cradles her stomach. Volga ambles along behind her, struggling to keep up. Soon they're out of sight, and I follow only by their tracks. But soon those disappear as well. I search the ground, and something glows on a branch, a fading yellow handprint. There's more on the tree limbs heading right. Thermal ghosts. My hand drifts to my head. What is inside me? I climb up the tree and shimmy along its branches, hurling myself along them to follow until they drop down and the tracks continue through the snow. A stitch has made its way into my side by the time I catch up to them atop the hill. Volga's lying on her belly, wheezing for air. Victra's squatting behind a rock, peering down at the crash site. Bloody damn, I mutter as I fall into the snow beside them. Told you she'd spot the tracks, Victra says to Volga. Volga looks at me in confusion, then points at Victra's belly. How fast are you without that? It would be rude to brag. Still heaving for air, I pull myself up on a rock to look over. The shuttles are just setting down. No thermal readouts come this time. Several dozen shouting reds pour out the back. I hand Victra my oculars. She pushes them away as if I insulted her. I pull them up to look through them, but Volga takes them away to use for herself. Muttering, I watch with my naked eyes as the reds search the interior of the crash site. A lone figure stands apart from the rest of them. Well, damn my eyes, Victra says with narrowing eyes. The chief bitch herself. What in Jove's name is she doing here? Who? I ask. Victor considers, then refuses to answer. Volga's gone stiff. I reach to take my oculars back. Volga surrenders them reluctantly. Victor snatches them away. Doesn't matter, she says. Let her see, Volga says. She has a right. See what? Time to go, Victor says. Give me the oculars. I snatch at them, but she pushes me off like a child. Simmering, I glare back over the rock at the lone figure. There's an ache at the base of my skull. Slowly, the blurry figure begins to sharpen. Not magnify exactly, but become substantial, recognizable to my brain, even though she is little more than a pinprick. When she turns, I go very still. Her face is as I remember it, half beauty, half horrible scar. It was stained green by the gunfire that killed my brother when she pulled the trigger. I know that woman, I whisper. Volga frowns. How can you? Her name is Harmony, Victra says, watching me with curiosity. The bad seed of Ares, and the leader of the Red Hand. I see you remember her. She attacked 121, I murmur. Heat radiates down my spine, deepening until a pinching sensation grips the back of my skull. Pixels flash across my vision. My heart begins to race as my limbs prick with sensation. It's like I can hear everything around me. The gurgling of gastric fluids in Volga's empty stomach. The sound of each flake of snow falling. The purr of the distant ship. Even the movement of Victra's baby in her womb. Then the orb whispers again from Volga's side. Victra frowns at me, noting a change. So your file reads. Kavix let her slither away. She killed your brother, Volga asks. Scars, yes? I told her that in the notes. My hearing reverts to normal. I nod my head, torn between confusion and rage. And my father, and my sister, and her children. Why is she here? Her husband and children died in a mine my family owned, Victra says. That woman is why Severo's father ended up with his head in a box. Couldn't stand that Ares was a gold. As for how she knew I was here, she chews her lip in thought. Do you want me to kill her? Volga asks, shifting her rifle. No, Victra says. I was not asking you. I stare at Harmony. She's clearer even than before. She's lighting a burner as two men with long metal sniffer mod jobs instead of noses begin sniffing the snow. Could you hit her from here? Probably. Don't mock the poor girl, Victra says. It's 1.2 kilometers. You'd need a drift scope in this wind. With that pulse rifle's muzzle flash, you'll bring those scuttles down on our heads. This does not concern you, Volga tells the gold. That woman has declared a blood war on my family, she says. It concerns me. And when they pick us off from those shuttles because you couldn't delay revenge, it'll concern all of us, including my baby. Volga ignores her. Lyria, do you want me to kill her? I see Harmony's head crack like an egg. I see blood smear on the snow. I see her gurgling through a hole in her throat, maybe one in her belly. But one look at Victra's belly and her knuckles going white as she grips her razor convinces me otherwise. Would Victra kill us even before Volga fired? No, I say. She's not worth it. Is it for the sake of the baby or Volga's life that I say that? Either way, it's not the response Victra expected. Her hand leaves the hilt of her razor. Volga breathes in relief and sets her rifle on her knees. I feel a strange comfort knowing what she was ready to do for me despite the risk. They'll find our track soon, Victra says. There are booms high overhead, the night sky spasms with light. Those Askamani, for lack of better classification, hacked the computer. I didn't think they could. They took control of the guns. They shredded the escape pods when you two were passed out. She grimaces. Had to turn off our beacon so the Pandora couldn't home in an orbital strike. With all that debris, my men aren't coming. Not soon enough, at least. We're on our own. She squints south toward the dark forest. It stretches as far as the eye can see. Her hand drifts to her belly, her only concession to fear. I find myself admiring her coolness, even as I hate her. But in the presence of harmony, that hate suddenly feels so very small. We need to find a comm array or get a boat that can take us south across the sound, she says. And we need to go now.
Chapter 52. Ephraim. Pale rain. Snow no longer falls over Olympia. The morning is bright as I walk the fluffy white streets. I needed to be away from Eagle Rest. It's been 4 hours since I descended the stairs, and I still can't walk off the meaty scent of blood and manure from Valdir's murder of God-Eater. It doesn't take long for passing machines to ruin the snow. Sounds of industry clatter through the city. Reds, who once languished in assimilation camps, work on floating construction skiffs, repairing the city in Sephi's bid to restore Olympia's grandeur. They're doing a hell of a job. While Quicksilver pocketed the money from his helium, Sephi pours it into Cimmeria. Their rule is absolute. Their executions of Red Hand terrorists, public and brutal, but they're spreading the wealth around. Lines of reds and low colours, fresh from the countryside, snake out from labour registration facilities. Each is given lodging, a fair salary, and a sense of purpose they've not had in years. Many mid-colours now work for Sephi as administrators. Others are left alone to make money however they see fit, so long as the Obsidians get a piece. The city is coming back to life. I don't feel that same optimism. Sephi may be good for Mars, for Lyria's people, but not for Volga. Or is it not my choice to make? Markets which were home to vagrants and bonfires when I arrived now bustle with new shops full of produce from southern Cimmeria, fish from the Thermic, textiles from Aegea, exotic wares from the core. Obsidians walk alongside silvers and browns and coppers and reds. It isn't utopia, but it isn't war either. Sephi's dream is coming alive. It's been weeks since the last Red Hand bombing. Before his breakdown, Valdir had steadily been chasing them from their strongholds up to the highlands, some say even across the sound. It will all break apart when Sephi dies. I can't let her bring Volga into this, but so long as the Julii still has her, I have to play along with Sephi's game. She knows she has me on a leash. A red boy tries to pickpocket me near a gambling den. I clout him on the ears and then show him proper technique by stealing the chronometer of a passing silver. I flip it to the boy and tell him to make his hands move smooth as a chronometer if he wants to keep them. He stares at me after I tousle his hair. "You're Ephraim T. Horn," he says. "Am I?" I look instinctively for syndicate thorns and laugh when he spits on my jacket. "Hail Reaper!" he cries and tries to punch me. I yelp and backpedal when I see more reds coming to investigate. I lose them by ducking into a brothel. My nose curls at the familiar smells, and I fend off the madam until the reds pass. I think it was a bloody lynch mob. Reaper's people are damn mad. Having lost my taste for a walk, I make for the long climb up the Bologna stairs back to Eagle Rest. I'm almost trampled by two reds running past, no manners at all. Am I back in Hyperion? Then I notice a change in the foot traffic. Those with data pads or optic implants stand fixated on their internal and external screens. Others rush for bars or the All Tribes' new multimedia stations. Even a uniformed obsidian watchman and his red partner let a shoplifter loose to drift toward a window. I fall in behind them. Light from a hologram of a space battle splashes through the window. It's the Pandora. She's under attack. I sprint back to the stairs. The Pandora fell to ships bearing All Tribe colours at 09:30 Olympia time. The sky rained bodies not long after. I caught the battle in flashes through the windows as I raced home. I watched the bodies on my datapad after I passed Eagle Rest security. The bodies were stripped naked and dumped over a gear at high altitude. In the sunlight, the pale rain of corpses looked almost elegant, like human-shaped feathers twirling through the air. Their fall could almost be mistaken for flight until they collided with Aegea's skyhooks and skyscrapers and parks and paved boulevards and white stone plazas and the roof of Lighthold, like 100,000 bugs on a windshield. The corpses were dropped by 4 All-Tribe troop carriers. 2 are shot down by the time I make it to the Skoogie training armory. By the time I'm kitted up in scarab skin and skip boots, belted with gear, and laden down with a huge insulated carry box for the neodymium magnet, new drones have caught footage of an obsidian brave in an All-Tribe uniform being dragged out of the third ship by aerial commandos. They'll think Sephi ordered the attack. But why in Jove's name would Sephi attack Victra? She wouldn't. It had to be Vulsung Far. He's got Sephi's number, setting up a war. Volga was likely one of those bodies dropped over Aegea. The thought almost sends me into a downward spiral, but I can't let it distract me. Without Volga, Sephi has no leash on me. She'll freeze my movement. She'll trap me in the sinking ship. Worse, she'll trap the kids. And from what I've seen of Vulsung Far, he has a plan, and it's escalation. With the tensions between the Republic as they are, this will be war if they buy that the All Tribe was in on this. That means the kids become real hostages. So I gotta get them out, and my window for exit is quickly closing. That kid better be wearing his harness under his clothing. I didn't get him that garage just to tinker with grav bikes. I take care to choose Spider Paralytic from the designer rounds and fit a magazine into my pistol, then throw on my jacket, loop a pack of explosives under my arm, and run to the snowball to attach the hook Pax made in the garage to the back of the landing ramp. Oh, this will be nasty. I pick my gear back up. Grania, a man says from behind. I turn. Goodkind. Freyhill's replacement as Vinkir of the Skoogie, stands in the doorway of the hangar. 2 of my cleverest Skoogie flank him. Grania, he calls without aggression. The Queen commands your presence. You're to join her in the Western Bunker. There it is. Sephi's soldiers won't mean me harm, but she'll never let me go out of her sight with the kids again. I have to act now, while I still have access to my ship. When Goodkind sees my scarab skin, the neodymium carry case, and the bag of explosives, his hand drifts towards his poison-edged throwing knives. The other 2 Skoogie frown and turn the safeties off their pulse rifles. They're confused. They just wanted to bring me to their queen. Sorry, lads, it's not personal. I get the drop on them, but damn, they're fast. In one fluid motion, I grab my pistol in its holster, fall flat on my back to minimize my exposure, and push my toes down on the pressure pads. The skip boots release an impulse that shoves me into a 10-meter backward slide. I fire 3 times through the holster. Goodkin's knives skim centimeters above my nose. The pulse rifle rounds pound into the hangar walls behind me. I stand up. All 3 Scoogie are rigid as boards from the paralytic slugs embedded in their foreheads. And then they teeter over, drooling foam. I strip their comms, and as I bound on the skip boots like a grasshopper, I apologize. I know you're just following your queen's orders, but this boat's going down. As I plant the explosives on the southern landing pad, I watch Mars go mad. The Republic news channels froth with anger and racial vitriol at the attack on the Pandora. They claim it was Cepheid's version of poetic irony. The rain on Mercury claimed 1 million obsidians. Here is Cepheid's rain, on the home of Lionheart and the Reaper, on the capital of the Rising. The revenge of the cold bloods, the inevitable pestilence of their nature. The world outside churns by the time I make it to an overlook of the training ludus. The children aren't at their lessons. I don't have access to their safety protocols for obvious reasons, but if Cephi is in the West bunker, they will be headed there too. Going aerial is dangerous with soft targets, so they would have taken the tunnels that emerge in the Western Statue Park just near the bunker. I can beat them there if I fly. Oh, Hades, I'm going to die. My mind races as I bound up marble steps and across snowy courtyards. It wasn't the All Tribe in those ships. It had to have been Azkomani. They're trying to start a war. Volga was in a cell. If they boarded, there's almost no chance she escaped. I see her falling in that rain over Aegea, her bones turning to splinters on the concrete roads. This is the worst time for the insurance plan. I thought I'd have more warning when things started going south. Maybe I should have left the second Far showed up, or when Valdir went berserk. I waited too long. There'll be too many of them. I holster my guns and clutch the neodymium box tighter. Against a pack of armored obsidian, a pistol won't do much. The exponential escalation has begun between the Republic and All Tribe. Seems the Republic is eager to blame the Obsidians for the attack. I hear it in the rip-wing engines lifting off from high mountain hangars, in the thunder of metal boots, in the drums beating in the army camps west of the city. I see it in the throngs of mid and low colours the Obsidians herd away from sensitive areas, and in the metal glinting in the sky, as orbital fleets prepare for a Republic response. Damn it, Cephi. Don't strike first at them. This is what Far wants. Volsung Far isn't a barbarian like I initially thought. If he organized the attack on the Pandora, he's trained in regime destabilization. It's textbook. Sooner or later, some nervous finger will twitch, or Far will play another card. Then the dominoes fall and the nukes go off. This is how a world ends. I won't sit here and wait for it. I'm too late to set up the neodymium magnet. I spot the children in the center of a cluster of Valkyrie, making their way across a statue park toward the western bunker. The female warriors each wear 60 kilograms of pulse armor, grav boots, and full complements of weapons. Their helmets are up. Shit, there goes any chance at Sonics. In battle, they could take a whole century of grey legionnaires, but this isn't a battle, and the last thing I want is to kill them. My legs burn as I close the distance to the Valkyrie. I shift to Ghost Cloak and activate the bombs on the southern landing pad. They're just big enough to break windows and make huge mushrooms of smoke. Sirens wail. The tactical response teams on deck in the heights of Griffin Hold deploy like meteors toward the pad and away from me. I activate the Snowball's autopilot and initiate its flight path. Back in the hangar, it will rumble over the paralyzed bodies of Goodkind and the two other Skoogie. The Valkyrie pick up speed, shoving the children between them. Damn it, this box is heavy. The Valkyrie's helmet optics will spot me now, despite the ghost cloak. I'm still 40 meters out. There's no trick that'll work on them. No clever lie to interrupt their orders. All they'll see is warped motion sprinting toward them. Statues explode around me, throwing off the Valkyrie's pulse rifles as the ghost cloak distorts their readouts of the debris. Two Valkyrie pop airborne. Oh, shit. I jump as high as I can on the skip boots, an ungainly 10 meters. I hurl the neodymium box at them. They think it's a bomb. They shoot it midair, melting the insulation and freeing the griffin-egg-sized magnet. It bowls straight into Braga on the ground, or at least I think it's Braga in that armor. There's a tug on my belt buckle as a magnet activates. The magnetism increases. Two airborne obsidians dip. Their grav boots' thrust capability far exceeds the magnet's force. But the metal components inside the boots' gravity generators come apart under the shearing forces. The women fall, pinwheeling out of the sky. The other Valkyrie lose their footing and weapons as they're pulled toward the high-powered magnetic field in a knotted ball of 12 confused killing machines. Tiny explosions crackle around the ball of obsidians as gas-powered munitions rupture. I land hard on the ground, damaging my boots, shocks, and spring one more time. The boots come apart mid-air from the magnetism as I land near Pax and Electra. I scream as something tears loose from inside my calf muscle and stretches my scarab skin. There's a second pop in my chest, a hot needle of pain. I watch in horror as a small cylinder strains against the inside of my scarab skin, like a parasitic alien seeking the magnet. What is that? I take a wobbly step. The world is going sideways. Pax runs to me as the magnet loses power. He catches me as I fall. This is not going according to plan. The obsidians are lurching like gout victims away from the magnet's diminishing pull. Pax looks at something over my head and shouts at Electra. They tear off their jackets to reveal the harnesses he built for them in the garage. The harnesses are built according to the specs I gave him, simple but sturdy, secured through the legs and around the hips. A spool of fiber wire sits like a fishing reel at their belly buttons. They link the ends of the fiber wire together and inflate the helium sac at the junction. They rise 50 meters in the air, unspooling the fiber wire as they rush to separate themselves. There's a roar overhead as a snowball rumbles along its programmed course. Its catchhook hangs from its belly and snags the joined fiber wire strands. The reels unspool. Pax runs over to me and hugs me like a koala as the fiber wire tightens and all three of us are pulled off our feet and carried after the snowball as it climbs away from Eagle Rest. It all goes woozy. Deja vu as the mountains blur under my feet and the Valkyrie set off in pursuit. Their boots will never catch the snowball. I'm laughing and wheezing by the time the hook retracts us into the back of the ship. Pax disappears, and Electra peels off my scarab skin. Ripwings will be in pursuit. Electra grabs the medkit from the wall, and I watch her face as she pulls a metal cutter from the wall and lowers it with narrow eyes toward my chest. What is she doing? I feel numb vibrations. Did she give me morphone? Is that my sternum she's cracking open? Smoke sizzles up from my chest. She sprays a coagulant. The artificial gravity in the ship increases dramatically, sealing us to the floor as Pax puts us in a corkscrew. The ship vibrates as her twin railguns spew at something outside the hull. Time drips past as Electra works over me. I stare at a bit of rust on the ceiling of the garage. I'll have to scrub that out. The Snowball is far too pretty a ship to have rust. When I look back down, Electra is gone. It's dark out. How much time has passed? I'm still numb from the morphone. I rise unsteadily to my feet and notice the long strip of res flesh going down my sternum. It stretches when I move too fast. I'm glued together. That'll hurt when the morphone wears off. As I stagger through the halls of the Snowball to the cockpit, I remember the bodies falling over Ajia. As I pass the small kitchen and dining nook, I see Volga and me bickering over Karachi as we sail between asteroid ports. I see her lying in her bunk listening to dreadful music. I see her ducking under the low doorways, whining about hitting her head. The Snowball hums around me, but it has no melody. The little dream of our life on the Lam erodes, leaving only a ship with nothing in it but the ghosts of what was never going to be. I find the two gold children in the cockpit. The Snowball flies dark, all her active instruments off as she carves through a low fog layer. Only her passive sensors throb. The sea beneath is dark and choppy. They look back in shock from steaming cups of tea when I sit in the back row of the cockpit. That was lucky, Pax says. Terrible. It was fucking terrible. I groan and hold my chest. Feels like I've been kicked by a sun-blood stallion. Electra's face gets even uglier as she wrinkles her brow. How are you awake? I gave you enough morphone for an obsidian. I thumb my chest woozily. Addict. You didn't even give me a blanket. You weren't hypothermic, she pauses. Were you awake that whole time? You mean when you gleefully used a metal cutter on my sternum? Yes. Fuck me, she laughs. That's full metal. I moan at the dull ache building in my chest. I might need a real hospital, I say, probing the res flesh. Were those? Tracker in the calf, Pax says, passing back a containment jar with two metal cylinders in it. I look at my calf. Oh, it's still weeping blood. You forgot something. I extend my leg to Electra. Juno's cunt. I'm not your nursemaid. There's a staple gun in the garage. Don't be a pixie about it. You're just a lovely person. What about this one? I point to the small cylinder alongside the tracker. That, Tin Man, was a heart spike on your aorta, Pax says. So they could turn off your heart with a flick of a finger. Fuck me. I think that was the general idea. I can't believe Seffi didn't trust me, I say, genuinely upset. They laugh like I'm joking. I forget what I was going to say. Ajia? We're not going back to the Republic, Pax replies. They'll just make us wait in the Citadel. That will not do. Attaboy. He looks like a man sitting there in the cockpit. Not that he's grown, but he's definitely changed. The surety in his eyes, the set of his jaw. When did it happen? When he stopped letting others choose for him? I admire the change, even as I feel it's a loss to the world that he's no longer a boy. The world has enough men. But maybe he can be a different kind of man. Probably not. But maybe is enough. Damn it, my chest hurts. There's a tube in my arm. I pull on it until I see I've been trailing a blood bag. Oh, I reel it in as he continues. If Aunt Victra managed to get to an escape pod, she'll have fallen in the Northern Hemisphere. Very specific, Electra mutters. Shut up. With all the debris, the telemetry was... You shut up. You almost didn't wear your harness. Pax looks back at me. That's not true. I had to twist her ear to get her to wear hers. Teacher's pet. Troglodyte. Omniprick. Hatchet face. Electra gasps. They pout at each other in silence. I chuckle. I knew that got under your skin. Shut up, they say in unison. I just grin. If they're alive, we're going to find them, Pax says after a long silence. Them? Our people and yours, Tin Man. Like it or not, you're with us now. And we're done watching everyone else slag everything up. It's our turn. Electra gives me the fakest smile I've ever seen and sneaks me the crux when Pax isn't looking. I close my eyes, feeling a weird warmth in my chest as I sigh. What could go wrong?
Chapter 53. Virginia. Pandemonium. After my mother threw herself off the cliffs of our Martian estate, my father came to me. It was one of the few audiences with him in which I was not summoned to stand sweaty palm before his desk next to that bloodstain in the carpet. He found me in the stable sitting in the sawdust. He was a giant to me in those days. He stroked the muzzle of my favourite horse and said, "Self-pity is the plebeian's luxury. All that occurs is either endurable or unendurable. If it is endurable, endure it. If it is unendurable, follow your mother." For once, I am thankful for the lesson. Cavax au telemanus. 1,000 reveries dance in the air. Memories drawn from the activity of my brain's neurons by means of the pandemonium chair. Free associations for the vox to pick apart and glean and use to hunt down the remnants of my family. The greens on the other side of the shaded glass catch these images in a net and move along to the next, cataloguing and sifting. Hiding place. Secret base. Fleet orders. Active howlers. Locations. Orders. Rendezvous coordinates. Rescue routes. Sevro al Barca. Black Cathedral. What is Black Cathedral? Doomsday protocols. Skyhall nuclear launch codes. Relevant faces and words speed in the air in front of me. It is a linear assault, meant to bypass my brain security conditioning. The words are an attempt to stimulate the visual word form area. The faces, to stimulate the fusiform face area. This causes neuron activity in the prefrontal cortex and temporal lobes, which Octavia's pandemonium chair then converts to visual and auditory replications. I am no easy victim. As part of the conditioning designed by Daxo Psychotex, every night I digested false memories, which I signified by populating the scenes with private totems, Spanish Renaissance paintings, off-coloured birds, certain songs or low-frequency hums, the smell of a gauche perfume, so I can distinguish the false from the real. The information they are gathering is a soup of false positives, incorrect data, passwords that trigger auto-destruct and locking mechanisms, and general incoherence that would take 1,000 psychotechs 10 years to sort. Fortunately, there are not 1,000 psychotechs in existence, and those my enemies use are no match for me. At times, they try to use my own technology against me. They embed small silver psycho spikes in my forehead in an attempt to force hack their way through. This is much more painful. Time dilates, distends, slows, stops, disappears. I may be in Publius's clutches, but it is Lilith who did this. Lilith went after my child. Lilith butchered Daxo. Lilith toyed with me. The Lion of Mars was shot down over Hyperion 10 years ago, to stop her from fulfilling my brother's last wish, for Luna to burn. But somehow, some way, she survived. I don't understand. Lilith isn't clever enough to do all of this. She is a killer, not an architect.
Did Atalantia plan it?
Atlas? When I am not in the chair, my senses are robbed from me by the psycho spike. I cannot tell where I am imprisoned, if I even ever leave the chair. I float in nothingness. No sight, no smell, no taste, no hearing. I am only consciousness in a void. It is my fear of what the afterlife truly holds for us. In that void, I float alone with my private fears. What my husband will do when he discovers my fate. What devious designs my enemies have for my child. What evil has befallen Sevro and our republic. The despair is total and unyielding. I continue to exist only because with existence there is still hope, though it feels so very far away. Daxo is dead. Twice they try to link psychotext directly to my brain, as I did with the Duke of Hands. My security packet activates. I unleash neurological attacks. The first man dies of a seizure. The second blocks that attack, but suffers a headache, and then kills himself the next day because of the insidious memories of trauma I planted in his head. What does Lilith want? To rule behind Publius? To avenge my dead brother? To atomize Luna and fulfill his dying wish after all these years? Whatever she wants, I cannot open my mind to her.
In time, they will break through, and my self-destruct protocol will go into effect, leading to a medulla cataclysm that will deactivate my breathing and turn off my heart.
It is only a matter of time. Then one day, I appear out of the void in the center of an empty moon hall court. I am delighted, but do not know why. I sit in the accursed chair, dead center before a plinth, upon which adjudicators once heard cases from behind an emblem of the society. The emblem is gone. Instead of the adjudicator's single chair, there are now seven. A rotating moon hangs over my head. Wardens comprise my only company. I smile, realizing I am physically unbound, yet I cannot move more than my head. The psychospike has disabled the nerve reflexes of my body beneath my six vertebra. Quadriplegic, then. How amusing and clever of Lilith. I never thought to use the spike quite like this. A sudden feeling of amazement fills me. Let's analyze. I try to speak to the wardens who are standing in small groups along the sides of the room, talking amongst themselves. A cow-like moo comes out of my mouth. Hilarious. The psychotechs have hijacked the Broca's area of my brain, disabling my language abilities, even though I maintain the motor skills to form sounds. Lilith, you clever girl. Sorry, lass, say again, a grey warden says, laughing. So my angular gyrus and Wernicke's area are intact. I can understand words and concepts. He was being an asshole. That warden is really quite handsome. I would kill him if I could, naturally. Yet I still wonder if his manhood is sufficient to please me. Probably not. I have high standards. No, don't be distracted. My supposition was correct. I will sit in silence as they accuse me of heinous crimes before billions of confused, frightened citizens who will be waiting for some clarity on the dreadfully violent massacre. They will have been waiting for days, perhaps weeks, for my account, and I will sit in silence as they accuse me of murdering Dancer. In my silence, my people will prescribe condescension and guilt. If this were a time of peace, there would be a rebellion and anarchy, but in a time of war, they will swallow it just to have a leader, and I will be executed. My son will watch.
Atalantia will lift the communication blockade on Mercury and let Darrow watch.
And Lilith will rule through Publius. It's masterful. I'm distracted. That Grey Warden really does have fine... Oh no. I can feel the scores of wounds the crowd gave me during the massacre. But not well. They are dull, distant, and deep beneath the pleasure.
They've hijacked the dopamine and oxytocin levels of my brain.
I'm happy when I should be furious. I can process and understand, but feel nothing but amplified post-coital joy. Lilith, that bitch. A hologram appears before me. It grows from a small blue embryo to consume half the room. The daylight hologram of a funeral procession enters the Moon Hall courtyard, the one outside the building in which I currently sit. It is led by blue-cloaked wardens on white horses. Black chains walk with heavy guns. Skiffs follow, the same that are used in the washing of high-rise windows, now laden with victims of Publius's purge. Members of my Lion Guard and my household. Senators, Sky Hall officers, businessmen and the politicos of the required hue. And on the front of the skiff, sitting with rigid dignity, is Theodora. The poor woman. I was nothing but hard on her. I should have brought her closer. The distrust created gaps, and now she will die. What a horrible world, I think with a smile. Publius stands with the leaders of the Vox's radical wing on the steps of the Moon Hall. They wear their unwashed senatorial robes stained with old blood. Ashes mark his face for mourning. How dramatic. The crowd teems against barricades and soldiers, jeering as the procession draws to a halt before the obelisk of Ares. It floats 10 meters above the ground. Commissioned by Victra to commemorate Severo's father, it bears images of the birth of the sons of Ares along its 100-meter length. Darrow's image, which by tradition always faces north, has been turned south. The hallowed site of his first wife now holds the place of honour. Io of Lycos sings in stone before the gallows that would claim her life. I always felt jealousy toward the dead girl. She knew Darrow back when all he wanted was to love and be loved. Darrow has loved me, truly loved me in a way that cannot exist outside of wartime. Yet that love reflects a gold love, not the red love that consumes the self, a love I could never feel. My brain has always been too far ahead of my heart, but even then, I cannot help but think that Io loved him less than he deserved. Will he watch me die from Mercury as the enemy engines of doom stalk ever closer? The procession has come to a stop.
How did it work? Did Atalantia sponsor Lilith? She must have.
Soldiers unload the prisoners at the tip of the obelisk's shadow and lead them along its path to the base of the obelisk. There is no struggle. Many walk with a determined step. Some few dance a little jig. Theodora lifts her eyes to behold the last rays of the sun as light glints off the bronze dome of the Moon Hall, where blindfolded Liberty stands with her scales. Pigeons watch from her bronze shoulders. When the victims all have been brought to the base of the obelisk, Publius recites the charges of which Theodora has been found guilty by the new power of the land. The People's Tribunal. Conspiracy to commit murder. Conspiracy to wrest legal authority from the Senate. Conspiracy to commit treason against the Republic. Each charge is met with a jeer from the crowd. The transparent partitions are lowered around the base of the obelisk and Theodora is taken under and secured to a hook of metal set in the stone. The Vox have made their mark. Grooves have been lasered into the stone for liquid to run into troughs beyond the partitions. Publius completes the reading of the charges. Theodora lifts her chin and stares straight ahead, a woman of worth underneath the shadow of 10,000 tons of stone. A woman who was grown in a tank, who was raised with Cupid's kiss to understand that pain is relieved only by sexual obedience, who was made to learn the art of pleasing the men who would one day rape her body, a woman who survived decades of sexual humiliation to become a glorified maid, and then chose to follow a young man at war with the world, not because she believed he would win, but because he was the first man to fight for her. She fought for him, and as the stone comes down, she is flattened by a marble monument dedicated to the dream she lived for. I close my eyes. Did she think of him in her last moment, or some childhood love? The tragedy of death is that I cannot ask, and her secret dies with her. Theodora is dead. The obelisk rises, stained red all along the bottom. Blood runs through the grooves. People from the crowd rush forward to dip their kerchiefs and banners in the blood troughs. They wave them around as Servilla au Arcos, Alexander's mother, watches them with a look of beleaguered contempt. Then the remains are hosed away, and Servilla is secured to the grisly hook. She shouts something. Then the stone comes down again. Does Alexander feel it on Mercury? When all have been executed, the image disappears. I hear voices moments later as the circus comes to the courtroom. A dozen aides swirl around Publius, exultant with their newfound power. What dreams these vox must have.
What fools to think it comes for free. Arch-Imperator Zahn, surrounded by her own staff, walks with Publius. Your agents missed their opportunity, Zahn says to Publius.
The blue looks at me, makes a small sound of distaste, and glares back at the copper. I advised you to use Dunnell instead of your mercenaries. If you weren't so paranoid of Mars, we wouldn't be in this position, Zahn sneers. The Reaper's brother runs 2/3 of Mars. The Obsidian bitch runs the other 1/3, and you say I'm paranoid. He only runs Mars because your men put a bullet through Arch-Governor Ossician. As for the Obsidian, we know who to blame. They look at me. We have more than enough helium to act before we take the mines back, Publius says. The Telemannus and Augustus Armada is on its way here.
Turn your eyes to that, Zahn. I will deal with Mars. After Zahn departs, Publius dismisses his staff to the far wall and looks at me.
I search his face for some sign of evil. Even now it is a pleasant face, a small chin and delicate facial bones, with only a long nose to add drama. But those eyes, for so long cold and distant, flicker with excitement. Apologies, Virginia, the incorruptible says. I'm sorry it came to this. If your child had only been delivered to me as requested, we could have spared you this trauma. But change is not always pretty. An honorable man like the incorruptible could harness the wardens. They were poised for defection after Wolfgar's death. But it must have been Lilith who poisoned the togas and destroyed the barrier to let the mob in. Publius isn't an operator. But how did he know about my agreement with Dancer? The question is driving me mad. I looked up to you once. You know, I truly did. Lilith's puppet smiles sadly to himself and leans against the dais. He doesn't know he's a puppet. He thinks he is in control. And here comes his gory damn speech. I thought you were our great hope. After the fall, I sung your praises. I debated radicals in our political halls. I preached an even middle ground. I thought the Vox misguided in their fervour. You were not perfect, far from it, but you were the best we could hope for. Let us be sensible, I said to those radicals. Let us understand we cannot make a new world in a day. But I was naive. Our whole political discourse was like a great infant. None of us knew our business or how big our feet were. There was no culture to build upon. Politics was new to us, but not to you. I watched you dismiss the voiceless majority. I watched you accrete power even as you spouted democratic platitudes. I watched you lead us, rung by rung, back into the old world. Soon, I knew there was no middle ground, only the past and the future. The poor and the rich. Us and you. It was then I realized sensibility is torpor by a more palatable name. Since the first ape pulled himself out of the mire to fashion an axe from stone, the meek have served the strong. We learned to content ourselves with crumbs. We allowed ourselves to be placated by religion, a promise of something after all this horror. We allowed ourselves to be enfeebled by poverty. We learned to be scolded whenever we raised our voice. Lasting change must be slow and steady and civil, we were told. That civility neutered us. But tell me, Virginia, was gold civil when they conquered Earth? Did they assemble in peaceful protests, or did they come with terror? He paces before me, waxing grandiloquent. If the basis of popular government in peacetime is virtue, the basis of popular government during revolution must be virtue and terror. Virtue without terror is helpless, as I have learned after 10 years of being the voice of reason. Terror without virtue is evil, as gold has taught. My terror is nothing more than speedy, severe, and inflexible justice. It is an emanation of virtue, a vehicle for it. I know, you think I allied with a monster. He picks lint from his toga, not knowing the strings his monster has put in him. But the child was meant to be returned to you after you stepped down. You have done far worse. You allied with the Moon Lords, fascist slavers. He looks direly offended. Using a criminal organization is hardly comparable. And now that you have removed them for me, hardly problematic. Your attacks on their facilities were nearly without flaw. I know you look down on me for this monologue, but after so many years of biting my tongue, it feels good to have a voice. I wanted you to see the executions because you will be found guilty today and die tomorrow, since my texts tell me you have a self-destruct protocol in your brain. Before you do, die that is, I wanted you to understand that I am different from you. What remains of the syndicate is already being destroyed. I do not abide criminality. Quicksilver has deserted Luna, but he will be hunted down and put to the obelisk like your spymaster. I do not allow allies to escape justice when they are villains just because they have utility. I am going to remake the world, Virginia. It will be as it should. One without hierarchy, without economic class distinctions. One in which it will be criminal to own excess wealth, where the loftiest goal of a human being is to serve the people. No corporations, no private citizens. All serve one another for dignity and protection of the common good. All men were created equal, and I will make them so. He claps his hands together. Now, are you ready for the justice of the meek? Chapter 54. Virginia. Justice of the Meek. We are joined by 6 radical Vox senators who survived the massacre to comprise the People's Tribunal. Several dozen others join, but it will not be a public monstrosity. Likely, Publius wanted to limit the possibility of my allies rescuing me. Whichever of them is alive. Even through the muddle of serotonin, I feel the fear of the final tally. Will I ever see anyone I love again? That's the loneliest thought. Not my husband, not my son, not Kavax, or Niobe, or Severo, or Liana, or even Victra. No one but these fools. They dither first with proclamations of the day's importance, of the seriousness of my ridiculous crimes to impose my will on humanity. Then Publius reads the charges as the robotic cameras zip around for dramatic angles. With 120 centimetres from my face, I listen and try not to smile from the chemicals racing in my brain. You are brought here today before the People's Tribunal so we may adjudicate your guilt or innocence as to the charges of high treason, assassination of Dancer O'Farron and loyal senators of the people, election fraud, bribery, conspiracy to install despotism, embezzlement, and fornication with a known collaborator of the Core Golds, Daxo Au Telemanus. How do you plead? I stare at them, finding it difficult to frown. They hold themselves with such ludicrous self-importance. Canaries pretending to be eagles. No, not canaries. Canaries can smell death coming. They're dodo birds. Silence will not save you from these charges, citizen, Publius says, frowning as an aide walks up and pours him a glass of water. Something moves in the glass. The robotic cameras go dead and drop to the floor, hacked. There's a noise in the back of the court, something resembling a scream. Publius shouts for the wardens to investigate. Half of the 24 make for the door, calling for backup as if their comms weren't dead. I stare straight at Publius as the weapons fire outside and grow silent. "Publius, what's happening?" a red senator asks. "It's Sevro," one of them cries. But Publius knows. He knows all too well, because moving in his glass is a squid. The remaining wardens take defensive positions around the entrance and the senators. I look up at the ceiling as 3 transparent shapes drop from it. They land beside the wardens guarding Publius and tear off their heads. Blood fountains onto the ghost cloaks. They deactivate to reveal 3 tall golds in black armor, embedded with the bones of complete skeletons. I know their blood-spattered faces. Each one was from House Pluto, the dark brotherhood my brother formed during our year at the Institute. They shared the hunting grounds with me as children, and human flesh with my brother. Each was there at Darrow's triumph, and survived 10 years in isolation. They are pale and mad from their time in our aquatic prison, and laugh at the Vox Senator's scream. The wardens at the door are already dead. I tilt my head back just enough to see the rest of the psychopaths enter. 17 remain of the blood-soaked Martian savages that my brother collected for his own personal quest to depose Octavia and reach the highest office in the worlds. Not a one of them is out of their 30s, and it seems a hilarious realization to think that perhaps their time in defeat will be but the footnote of their saga. Lilith, queen of the Syndicate, walks at the head of the pack. She pulls off the red face, wig, and contacts she wore at the forum, and takes a black iron crown from one of her men and sets it on her head. She walks toward me carrying a warden's head. She rolls it like a playing ball toward the speechless senators. They murmur her name in terror. Several try to flee. She runs a hand along the back of my head as she comes to a stop. "Publius, you've been very naughty." Her voice is dead and empty of humour. "I gave you that seed and you try to kill me. This is not the behaviour of a pet." She produces a studded dog collar and a leash. "Come." Publius does not move. The Vox senators stare at him. "You're in league with Bone Riders," a red cries. "Have you gone mad?" Publius has lost his voice. Lilith's becomes a whip. "Publius, come." "You're not a red," he murmurs. Lilith tilts her head. "The right hand of the Emperor. A red. Disgusting." "Begone, slaver," a blue shouts at her. "We are free men and women here. We wear your chains no more. We would rather die than..." Lilith lunges in a way the blue probably never thought possible. One moment she is beside me. The next she has tackled the blue and is hacking her face apart with an iron hatchet. When the blue's head is a ruin, Lilith walks back to me and holds out the collar, motioning, "Publius, come." Publius quivers, and I feel sorry for him. How this all must have started as a distant fantasy when Lilith came to offer him her services. Closer and closer he drew to his prize, a year away, a week away, a day away, and finally he had power. Now this. That would test any soul. His crumbles. He lowers himself to his knees and crawls to Lilith. She fits the collar around his neck very gently and strokes his face. "You will be a good dog, won't you?" she says face to face with him. "Won't you?" "Yes," he lowers his head. "Yes, what?" "Yes, Domina." Lilith produces collars for the rest of the tribunal. Her men pull them down to fix them tight. 2 protest and are killed. After the survivors are fitted, Lilith tilts her head to the door behind me. "My Emperor, your slaves await." Small hands applaud from behind me, and the Bone Riders bend in amorous supplication. Even Lilith.
"Well done, my queen. Well done, my friends."
That voice. Its accent is Lunese, but I know it to my bones. Fear eclipses all rational thought. Little footsteps make their way to the front of the court. An abomination wears the face of a small boy around 10 years old. Its hair is flaxen, its face narrow, its eyes reptilian in their cold curiosity. It stands before the enslaved vox carrying several simple plates. "I know this emotion," the abomination says sweetly. "This reminds me of a novel I've read about a shoemaker in old Russia. It's this moment, isn't it? This moment where you breathe on all fours, your head privately tucked to your own chins, where the personal myth which you shrouded around your heart collapses under its own weight, and you realize what you actually are. Not weak. That would still give you a victim narrative with enough tragic romance upon which to nurse yourselves. Not average. You are all clever in a rudimentary way. Just smart enough to rise above the sea of human meat to comprehend how insignificant you really are." The abomination touches Publius's head. "We all want to be special. It must ache you to discover you are not." He goes to the blue Lilith slaughtered and picks out handfuls of her brains and deposits them upon the plates before setting each one in front of the vox. Lilith falls to her knee and unveils a small box. From the box, the abomination draws an antique razor. "The sword of Selenius." He cracks the whip. "The natural order has resumed," he says to the vox. "Hic sun Leones," say his men. "The son of Augustus rules the Republic. But what is a world with only lions? Do my bidding, and you will be rich and mighty. Slave kings of the Emperor." He points the sword of Selenius at them. "Now, eat your supper." Publius is the first to eat. As they cry and chew, the abomination watches and turns to me with familial affection. "Hello, sister. So nice to finally meet you." Chapter 55. Virginia. The Wolf and the Mother. "Apparently, howlers do kneel," Lilith says. "I am in a nightmare." The clone of my brother stands before the morning chair, running his hand along the smooth wood, as if it held an electric current. Still wearing his collar, Publius sits on the floor staring at nothing. Gorgo, the obsidian enforcer with gold teeth, watches the clone with deep respect. Severo, Pebble and Clown are driven to their knees beside me before the morning chair. They have been beaten to a pulp, which means they look quite like I did after the mob did its work. Even my hair is missing chunks. My forearms are covered with poorly suited wounds. "You untidy abortion," Severo hisses at Lilith through mashed lips. "How the hell are you still sucking oxygen?" He glares at the clone. "And what the fucking fuck is that?" Lilith smiles idly and sits at the foot of the clone's chair. Bone riders rove about. Made all the more mad by their isolation in Deepgrave, they have decorated the room with the corpses of Republic wardens. "Mustang, what is this?" Severo asks. "Who is the beady-eyed rodent?" "That is a clone of my brother," I reply. The spike has not been removed but no longer plays with my serotonin levels. Instead, my legs are paralyzed. I barely notice. "The jackal," Pebble whispers. "Bullshit," Severo says. "Bullshit." He tries to stand but receives a kick from a bone rider to his stomach. He falls, gasping. Gorgo walks up to him and kicks him again for good measure before returning to the clone. "How?" "The Emperor is a master strategist," Lilith proclaims. "He sees all."
"He sees all," Gorgo echoes.
"I was not certain my plan to wrest control of the sovereignty from Octavia would work," the abomination says, still examining the chair. "So I left dear Lilith instructions and samples of my DNA in case my life was spent in the effort. I left messages and instructions to myself. One can never be too careful."
He walks around the chair, eyes barely coming over the top. After she recovered from her own wounds, Lilith went to Earth and found Zanzibar, the master carver, and proved her ultimate loyalty by growing me in her own womb. Severo literally throws up. He spits bile on the ground. You that desperate to get the jackal inside you? The only way you could do it was by shitting out his clone. Lilith lunges forward, so close to caving in Severo's skull with her hatchet. The abomination calls out her name and she stops mid-swing. The look she gives him is deep with affection, none of it motherly. No one misses it, not even the Bone Riders, but they don't seem to care one look. The joy they feel being in their armor again is almost childlike. That is the most bent thing I've ever heard, Clown says. Pebble squints at Clown. Did you give us LSD again? You know I hate LSD. Quality stock like Victra choosing a mongrel for a mate is far more perverse than simple cloning, the clone says.
Lilith blinks unhappily at the mention of the Julii.
Victra's sister, Antonia, was my brother's lover before he died, and she did not look like Lilith. But that was the opinion of my first life. I care very little, except for the pollution of the gene pool that you and your mongrel children represent. My babies would eat your heart out with a spoon, Severo says. Oh, please, Severo. It wouldn't do to make me fret. He taps his finger on his chin. I have learned something watching this Republic. People only obey when it costs them something to disobey. So, the next time you threaten me, Severo, I will teach you how much it costs, and we'll see if it happens again. Prime? Don't talk to me like you know me. I don't know you, you little freak. You're not a real person, you're just afterbirth. Mustang, how have you not vomited all over yourself? I stay silent, unable to put my cluttered thoughts to words. Daxo, Dancer, Theodora, dead. Who else? Holiday? Darrow's mother? Kavax? Who else because of my monstrous bloodline? Daxo was my best friend. And this is what killed him. I feel shattered. If this creature got a hold of Pax, thank Jove for Victra. Keep him safe. Keep Electra safe. Mustang, Severo says. Can you hear me? Her name is Virginia, the clone says to Severo. The same blood runs through her veins as in mine. I am Adrius, and I am not Adrius. In some ways, I am less. In some, I am more. I have learned from my first life, studied the archival recordings of the Institute and the lives of my enemies. He sits down in the morning chair. Pulling apart your Republic was so easy a child could do it, he smiles. I cannot rule publicly, of course. In time, perhaps. But until then, my socialist dog will do. He strokes Publius's head. The disgraced senator flinches. I did intend for Pax to be my passage so I could earn my scar. But Sephi interfered, and Atlas insisted Lilith not pursue. I finally speak. The Fear Knight would never ally with you. You nuked Luna. He doesn't know I exist, of course. This was my design. My day of red doves. My little birds sang such sweet songs to me. He gestures to the high windows where the patchel bells sing. There were patchel bell in the window when Dancer and I met. There were patchel bell in the gardens where I had so many conversations. But we checked them for hardware when Sophocles kept eating them. It must be something more sophisticated than that. Atlas and Atalantia merely liaise with Lilith in the end, the clone continues. We were going to sell Electra to Julia Albellona. Old debts and all. He smiles at Lilith. She looks pleased to be out of her red disguise and back in her Bone Rider armor. The fools think they have a puppet on Luna, a red queen. What a hollow farce. He taps his finger to his lips. He is identical to Adrius, even in his tics, if not in his memories. I'm going to kill you, Severo says,
didn't get the pleasure last time. And it will be slow.
The clone watches him without emotion. I told you the next threat would cost you. This is your fault. Gorgo, please bring in the wolf and the prisoners. The obsidian disappears out a side passage. A moment later, the great sun doors at the far end of the hall open. Syndicate Thorns guide in a cargo skiff loaded with a giant iron statue of a howling wolf. It thumps against the ground as it sets down behind us. Sounds come from inside. A voice calls out through the iron.
Min Min?
Pebble whispers beside me.
No, 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 Clown murmurs.
Severo just watches as the iron wolf begins to glow with heat. The iron thumps as the howlers inside try to kick their way out. Smoke slithers through the wolf's nostrils. Then the trapped men and women inside begin to scream. As they melt in its belly, their cries of agony funnel through the chamber of the wolf's throat to ululate into a howl. When no more howls escape the wolf and the smell of roasted meat fills the room, the clone speaks. Did you learn your lesson, Severo? Severo does not reply. He's not inside his body at all. Neither are Clown and Pebble. Their eyes are glassy, their shoulders slumped. Severo's eyes are dry and dead. I hope you have, Severo, because I have great plans for you. My sister has uncovered ways to play with the mind. I'm going to play with yours. So the next time you see your wife, your daughters, you will not even know who they are. I will strip you of all you wanted, as you and your pack stripped me of all I wanted. He strokes the chair. Then we will be even. I have never seen Severo afraid like this. He glances at me, knowing full well what we did to the Duke of Hands. And now that it is his turn, all the blood rushes from his face. His hands tremble at his sides as if he is being electrocuted. His girls are his everything. With an animal scream, he lunges for Adrius and gets just far enough for Lilith to personally beat him to the ground. She gets up, and she nails him in the head with the hilt of her hatchet. He stands again, bleeding everywhere, and another bone rider kicks him in the kidneys. Time and again, he stands up, and takes a step toward the clone until Lilith kicks him in the head 2 steps short. Severo goes limp on the ground, and I can do nothing. My confidence, my proud intellect are dormant in the face of this. I am paralyzed inside and out with horror. Just kill us, and end this ridiculous show, I snap. The clone's face is blank for me as bone riders drag Severo away. You are not Adrius. You're just playing the role she taught you. I point at Lilith. The clone walks down from his perch to cut my face. The blood that runs through your veins runs through mine. You are my sister, Virginia, my only blood. How could I ever kill you? He strokes my hair. You are family. Too long you have been weighed down by fools and insects. You deserve a second chance. Behind him, Lilith sucks on her teeth. You deserve true dominion over the sheep. Chapter 56. Virginia. A maze with no center. I am the guest of honor at a banquet for jackals. My brother's creatures could never have been accused of sanity before their imprisonment, but after so long robbed of power, they have become mad with the taste of it. As night sets, Sunhall turns to orgiastic bedlam. Niobe's fleet has arrived with the ships of my house, House Telemannus, House Arcos, and almost all the lesser gold houses of the Republic. The Vox fleet over Luna gathers in formation to block their way to the planet. The hologram of the pending space battle floats over the room. While the Republic eats itself, the Bone Riders party. Safe behind citadel walls and puppet legions, they indulge in yellow and green mountain ranges of narcotics. They have emptied the citadel cellars of my husband's whiskey and chugged down bottles of wine that have been in my family for generations.
Their syndicate servants ferry them supplies of pinks and political enemies. On them, they indulge their most depraved appetites. Some poor souls are fetched from the deep cells to be used for fencing practice, or made to fight each other naked in gladiatorial bouts to the death. The bodies fall to the floor to die, and thorns drag them out and bring new ones in. The prisons, brimming as they are with the Vox's enemies, have an unlimited supply. When I have to watch the silver senator Britannia Ag Krieg face down an unarmed drunk bone rider, I turn away.
She no longer seems an adversary, or even a rich woman. To them, she's just the lower species.
Britannia dies with the sound of wet towels slapping stone. I have seen almost all there is to see, so it is not the barbarity that irks me. It is the shallowness of their cause. There is no cause. There is no religion. No delusion of honour, only some vague notion of retribution and domination, which means little more to them than the degradation of their enemies. To me, these 10 years have felt like 100, full of texture and trials and triumphs. But these savages were frozen in time and deep grave. They did not evolve. They only want to live in the past, in that fleeting moment of youth, where even the sovereign feared the House Pluto of Mars's institute. They were barely past 20 years old, and all the worlds were laid out before them. Now, in their ecstasy, they don't realize how far behind everyone else they are. Or maybe that is the